You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show, I am joined, as I will be, I think, somewhat frequently over the next several months as we attack this offseason with vigor and enthusiasm. It's Brendan Vogt.
Adam, what's up, man? My old friend. I haven't seen you since, like, exit interviews.
Isn't it weird?
It is.
We're,
it
like, really in the is. Thick of everything, and then it's just like, okay, we're done. And now I'm way
the... I talk to you every day for about, like, 4 months, and yeah. I don't think I've talked to you in 2 weeks.
I've learned from doing this, because as people know, from running Stiffs, and you actually joined, I think, once in, like, a June or a July or something, right? When you first came on board, it was, like, the middle of the offseason or early part. And I learned this from covering it, that the season, especially for what we get paid or unpaid for our work we do, you're burned out by the end of the season. And I just want people to have their space early on, because I know
absolutely.
if I'm cracking the whip, not even cracking the whip with you guys, with myself as well. If I'm cracking the whip in like June and stuff, then come October, we're going to all just kind of be done with it.
Well, luckily, man, we've got so much exciting draft content to dive into. We're here. Plenty going on this summer.
It's funny because the draft is like the biggest time of the year for sports writers. Like that's everybody gets in it. If it's the NFL draft, that's like the biggest day on ESPN, right? The entire year. And it's the same with the NBA, but let's put it this way. The Nuggets have a chance of doing something in the draft, I would say. I mean, I wouldn't say it's completely a certainty that they're not going to make a move. Do you have any sense? Are you reading the tea leaves at all to try to guess if the Nuggets get involved?
Doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of urgency, right? Obviously, we're not involved in whatever group text these decisions are made in. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm not getting I think there's a chance, but I'm not getting like a strong sign that they're eager to make a move. My question back to you would be, what is the hole that they're filling or looking to fill, you know, with a rookie coming in? Obviously, you want to continue adding depth, young players on affordable contracts that can hopefully slide into important roles down the line. But as far as looking at the Nuggets and trying to get better from last season, trying to win that one more game, you know, what do you get from someone drafting 15 and beyond?
Yeah.
Obviously, the Nuggets know better than anyone. There are diamonds in the rough, but your chances of finding a needle mover, Adam, in this draft trading into me are slim.
I think, and I love when you say my name too, Brendan. I just think it's so great.
Very professional.
It's very, very professional, Brendan. But no,
thank you.
No, you're right, though. The Nuggets, if they picked up a pick, I think the point of the draft when you're sort of in the stage the Nuggets are in or better, the point is, one, to get like cheap labor. Let's be honest. Rookies for 4 years don't cost a lot of money. But then also it's just to kind of keep the pipeline full, because you would hope that your top two or maybe three guys stay for, you know, several iterations of your team. But the rest of the guys kind of revolve around. And you look at it, it's whoever, if they were to get a draft at like the 18th pick or 20th pick or something like that, it wouldn't be a guy that probably has a huge impact this year. But you would hope 2 or 3 years from now, when maybe a Will Barton has moved on or a Millsap has moved on, now that guy is ready to go. And you just kind of keep that pipeline going. So to me, that's like one of the major reasons. The other reason you would try to get a draft pick, and I guess we were going to do this segment three, but let's do it one now because it's kind of a natural segue. The other reason would be because you have guys on the team that you just need to consolidate. And I think this is a real sort of worry with this team. They have next year coming in Michael Porter Jr. and Jared Vanderbilt, two guys I remain incredibly high on. And Juancho Hernangómez, who I loved, you know, I still love the idea of him. Those three guys are going to try to get minutes. And the only rotation piece out of the lineup now is going to be Trey Lyles. So already you kind of look at that and think there's just not minutes for everybody. That would be the other reason to trade for a draft pick, is you kind of have wasted, you're wasting some guys on the shelf.
Right. Or maybe you're even trying to get off of some money, not to get too far ahead of ourselves. But if you don't know how that Millsap thing plays out, you've got to pay Jamal. If you don't feel like this current iteration of the Nuggets is good enough, maybe you're looking at that Barton contract or somehow trying to get off of Plumlee, whatever it may be. So there are options there. There are reasons why you get involved. I don't know why, Adam. I just have a strong gut feeling we'll be twiddling our thumbs on draft night.
I think so too. It's strong feeling, and also because not making a move is always the default most likely thing, right?
Right. So, precise. Occam's razor.
Yeah. So that's probably what's going to happen. Now, let's just go. So the draft happens, and then free agency like immediately after that. This is the time. It's actually one of the most fun like week and a half. Really 2 weeks going all the way into summer league. It's one of the best times in the NBA. The NBA kind of peaks, sadly, in the first couple weeks of the offseason. As the Nuggets get ready to go, how many players are on the absolutely under no circumstances should you ever trade this player list?
I think it's only one. I think the Nuggets feel like it's two. We have evidence to support that now, right?
Maybe. I think they definitely think it's one. And I assume we're talking about the same guy, Tyler Lydon.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
Yes. Good joke. No, of course, we're talking about Nikola Jokic. Look, we can skip Jokic, right? We all won.
Let's just have fun with this one real quick, because I was trying to think of this earlier, and I was going to do a column on it, and I thought, nah, this is not worth a column. But Jokic for LeBron James, who says no?
Denver.
Jokic for Steph Curry, who says no? And again, factor in their contracts, too.
Golden State.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think Denver says no too, though. I think both do.
Yeah.
You know, Kawhi, the only two I could really think of, like Kevin Durant, you would say no. The only two I could really think of were Giannis and Kawhi. I think Kawhi Leonard probably is another guy, just because he's getting ready to sign a long-term deal. So both of those guys you would have some security with. I don't think there's any other players the Nuggets would trade Jokic for, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, anyone else who's in his stratosphere is either older, right, on a different type of deal, or not the right type of player.
Right.
For I mean, the entire blueprint's built around Jokic, right? So, so even that Giannis trade, I think Denver would say no to, as would Milwaukee,
right,
because their rosters are shaped around the way in which their transcendent young players are great. So for Denver, your chance of getting another young guy with a similar skill set, with that much team control, it's slim to none. It might be none. So Jokic is untouchable.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right. So after that, then what's the next tier for you? Like, who's the next tier of guy that you would just, in terms of like, unwillingness to trade them, and then what would it take to trade that guy?
I've got two guys in this tier. It is a 1A, 1B thing. It's Jamal and Gary. And Jamal's a really interesting one, because obviously when you decide not to trade for Anthony Davis in this scenario, or not to make that offer, you know, we're talking about that Denver Post report that the Nuggets were at least interested. We're not eager to include Jamal Murray. So we're talking about team control there. Murray versus AD straight up, it's no question.
Of course.
But with that in mind, at 22 years old, with the recent sort of development of that two-man game with Jokic, budding chemistry, I don't think there are a lot of guys the Nuggets are eager to trade Murray for. If they even would, especially when the timeline is such that I think you really have another year here, Adam, to gather data points to really get a sense of who Murray is and what he looks like alongside Jokic. So there's just no rush for Murray or Harris, and that's why I don't think either of them are too likely to be dealt.
I think Gary Harris could be dealt. And it's not – if you were asking me, everybody kind of knows I'm somehow developing a reputation as like a Jamal Murray hater or skeptic, and I don't think that's like a representation of how I feel about him at all. It's just I'm more of the opinion of like we don't know yet, and that's right. Fine. He's young, and it's rare for you to know at this age. He's not in the category of a Giannis or a Jokic where it was evident right away. But his upside's really high, but his price is going to be really high. And the NBA is as such that when these guys come in as young as they are, especially at the guard position, you have to make a $100+ million decision on them before you really know. And Denver's going to be in that position. And I think even if they wait till the end of next year, they're probably going to be in a position where it's like, we think this guy is going to turn into, you know, the next.
Is there a type of Murray trade that makes sense to you? You know, like a player archetype? You know, would they be comfortable sliding Monte in? You know, would they be looking to turn Murray into a different type of point guard? Like, is there a scenario you can see in your head in which Murray gets dealt?
A small forward to me has always been the second most important player on the Nuggets roster, especially if it's like a point forward. And I just don't think there's very many of those. So obviously you're talking about a Giannis. He doesn't want out, so that's off the table. Like a Kevin Durant, a Kawhi Leonard type. Like if it came down to it where you could get one of those guys and you had to cough up Murray, I would say yes. And the one I've thrown out, I don't really want to rehash it because the take's already out there. But Ben Simmons is sort of that, like, the line for me, right? He's the guy that I'm not convinced is better, that it would be better, but I do think the idea is better. So that would kind of be. And then also point guards, quite frankly, there's 20 good point guards in the NBA right now. There's right. not nearly as many great, like, point forwards, and so that's kind of the hard part about it. But I'm with you. I think the Nuggets are all in on Murray and Jokic. And with Gary, he's the interesting one because you start to wonder. I think we're all victims of recency bias because Gary just wasn't that great for most of this year. And I feel like we lost something. And the one question I really have that I don't know the answer to is, was he bad strictly because of the injury? Or not bad, but was he not his full self because of the injury? Or is there something to the, like, you only need one good lead guard and the rest of the guys, there's overlapping value there?
Right, or maybe you need to just make sure you're getting the second guard involved. We talked so much about that development between Jokic and Murray, but at times, Adam, it seemed like it came at the cost of other facets of the offense. And Gary Harris, who is one of the better playmakers and ball handlers on this team, is standing in the corner a lot and not always even in the short corner. And even when he was, he failed to hit those shots. So Gary is known for that rock solid consistency. Was it just that he wasn't involved enough this year and he was just sort of relegated to a smaller role than he should be filling? I mean, at times I wondered if that was the case.
I've got Jokic's never trade under any circumstance. Jamal Murray is only trade for a superstar that fits maybe a more vital or rare role. And I would have Gary Harris in the, like, third tier for me, which would just be something like, you know, because of the contract even a little bit and the injuries and stuff like that, it would be like, I'm not looking to trade him. I don't want to. Right. I hope he's on this team's final, whatever the final form is of this iteration, I hope he's on it. But if somebody called and there was just a player, you're like, man, that guy does just kind of do what he does, you know, does something that Denver needs a little bit more. I would take it. And it also, the Nuggets have Will Barton and Malik Beasley. They they have solid guys behind him. Not as good, but, you know, you take one step backwards at small forward, at shooting guard, five steps forward at small forward, that's still a net positive.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Beasley's name, because I don't know if you're ready to transition here, but let's tease
Beasley.
Coming up after the break.
Coming up with Brendan.
Strong tease.
we'll take a break, but when we do come back, we're gonna keep talking about these tiers. Where does MPJ fall? Draft picks, all of that stuff. We'll be right back. When is peak MPJ hype? Like, if you were to make a guess, is it the night before Summer League? Is it the night before the start of the season? Like, it's starting to pick up. The MPJ hype is kind of, people are starting to get excited.
I think it'll be Summer League, right? Because we don't know yet how much he'll play, if he'll play for the Nuggets in the regular season. And that if is still on the table, even in year two for me. But I think it'll be Summer League because that's his show, right? That's his time to shine. We're going center stage, MPJ versus Zion. And this is a...
Maybe this Zion. Sounds like Zion might not play now because of Team USA, which is a real fat drag. Right.
Which is real classic Nug life, really. But, you know, if MPJ is a player of the caliber that pre-injury we all knew he was, that he was hyped up to be, then he goes off in Summer League. Then he dominates. And so I think everyone's excited to see him in an opportunity where the ball's in his hands a lot and we really get to see what he's made of. So I think it'll be Summer League also because... I just think there are still a lot of questions about how much he can actually help the pro team. So Summer League for me.
Yeah, I think it certainly – I can't wait. I'm going to be honest. I'm very excited for Michael Porter Jr. I have done a great job for my own sanity of just not really thinking about him. And
you've been a grouch.
Well, I mean, I think it's a healthy skepticism, to be honest with you, and I still remain that way. Same. But we could have worried ourselves – or not really worried, but like – it would have been really annoying if November, December, January, we were talking about this because it just didn't matter. It finally is almost time to start mattering, and I'm kind of excited for it. There's little rumblings. You know, you talk to people with the organization, and they're not like, you know, full steam ahead with the hype or anything, but they're kind of like, oh, no, we're excited. We can't wait. The guy's so talented. We can't wait. You know, everybody's excited to actually see him out on the court. So, I don't know. There's a real scenario where he just shines at Summer League, and we're like, oh, crap.
He just garners hype in a way that no other player on this roster does. Not Murray, not Jokic. I know it sounds absurd, but without stepping on the court, he's become, I don't want to say a fan favorite, but the peak of fan interest. And they treat him like they know how good this young team is. They know how bright their future is. And then they have this MPJ, right? So they get to have the young, fun team and the number one type recruit coming in. So I think the fans are like, almost delusional about it, which is cool. It's fun. They should be that way. I mean, I'm with you. I have some healthy skepticism here, but it's fun to have a guy like this on your roster. And I think the fans almost think like this guy could be a real needle mover. This guy could be what puts us over the top.
So before we went to break, it sounded like you were going to have Beasley with Gary Harris in the same tier or just a tier below him in terms of like you would not want to trade him.
I have him spearheading the next tier.
Okay, so he's like tier three for you because you had Gary and Jamal in the same.
Yeah, although you know what? Let me. I'm with you on the amended. yeah. So I'll put Beasley to start tier four.
Okay, he's at the top of tier four for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very important that we get these distinctions so the audience can play along.
Who else is in that tier?
I've got three guys.
Okay.
MPJ, Jared Vanderbilt, and Monte Morris.
Oh, so you got four more guys. Okay, so four total with Beasley. So here's my thing about MPJ. He is, at the moment, still the mystery box. And there's just still more that could go wrong that could go right. So I have him way lower. Like, if a team was – there are lots of trades I could make with my MPJ in him. Especially, this might be harder to say in 2 weeks. It might be easier to say in 2 weeks. That's the big gamble of it all. It's kind of like, what's that thing you do at Christmas – where you exchange gifts, but then you could steal gifts without knowing what they
are. Secret Santa or whatever.
Something like that. I don't think it's Secret. Maybe it's Secret Santa. I don't remember. But anyway, it's like that, where we don't know what he is, so trading him at this moment is tough, but I still would probably do it because a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think my downer worst guy ever take with MPJ is that his real value lies in a sweetener, right, in a deal. I don't think the package can be centered around a question mark. But my thing is, if MPJ comes in and plays really well for a month, you throw him into a deal that's maybe centered around some better players, Murray or Harris. Obviously, this would be for a clear upgrade, this hypothetical. Right. He holds more value than maybe just a late first, right? He has that MPJ tantalizing quality, whether you believe he's going to get there or not. So, you know, he could be 23. He could be two on this list. Because of the mystery and because of the intrigue around talented prospects, I just have him at five because if he plays well for a month, a lot of teams would view him as an asset, I think.
MPJ's work ethic and sort of like drive has been something I've been heard talked about quite a bit, that he's a gym rat, very focused on basketball, very like disciplined trainer. You know, he trains really, really hard and with focus. So I think those things are good. I think Jared Vanderbilt – I think the Nuggets have brought in a lot of guys that are that way, to be honest with you. Yep. Monte Morris, Jared Vanderbilt. I think all of those guys – to me, Beasley is up there, but to me, his value is probably higher than most of those guys. And for that reason, I think I might be more willing to part with him because Denver has Barton. They have Gary Harris. If there's a lot of teams that think Beasley could be their guy, you might be able to get something really of value back. So he's go ahead.
Sorry, well, he's just got that dual value, too, of maybe he's the guy you trade, or you're that much more comfortable trading Gary for a clear upgrade at the three or something because you like how Beasley would slide in. So he has value sort of in all those different ways right now.
And then I think Monte Morris for me was my next tier. And a lot of that
we're dropping down.
Yeah, because he's the contract that's just so perfect. I mean, he's going to be like eight times more valuable than his contract over the next two seasons. So he's just I think he's a solid backup point guard. I think he probably hit a wall last year and the playoffs weren't great. But just to me, he's one of those guys that like you feel good about. He's on the team. You're like, oh, sweet. We're solid at backup point guard. Yep. That's and pretty much solid at the bench, too, which is a big plus. So Vanderbilt, I'm still super high on, man. I am just about as excited to watch him. At some moments, I'm more excited to watch him than I am Michael Porter Jr. I think fans are kind of funny because he's played like, what, 18 minutes? And people already have a full scouting report on him. They're like, oh, yeah, well, he can't shoot and he can't finish. It's like, come on, guys. The dude hadn't played basketball in a year and a half. He played like garbage time four times. And now we have a scouting. To me, I see a super athlete, a super defender, super rebounder, and this guy that can pass. And I just look at the finals and I look at your Draymonds and your Siakams. Yes. And I'm like, man, this is the direction the league is moving. And he looks like a guy that is primed for it.
No doubt about it. When you look at this Nuggets roster, what's missing beyond a real true three or an elite guy on the three, which seems paramount to winning these days, you see that lack of those body types. Maybe not guys that play like Pascal Siakam, but literally just physically look like him, right? Yeah,
and can move like him.
Yeah, that are long and can move and can switch and are physical. And the Nuggets, there's a severe lack of those type of bodies.
Yep.
And so Vanderbilt's defensive versatility in that way is so tantalizing. And then also, man, the offensive deficiencies, like you said, we don't know what he will or won't be able to do yet. But he also hasn't played a minute with Nikola Jokic, who is a guy who mitigates his deficiencies and really elevates what he's good at. And that pass, man, garbage time or not, Phoenix or not, full court, left hand, balance. I mean, that's sweet, man.
Some of his open court passes from high school, like the high school mixes, are really high-level stuff, man. And that's why I think the Siakam comp is cool. Part of what made Siakam so deadly is he would get the ball and transition, and he's kind of got a Giannis effect to him, where his strides are so long and his passing is so good. Like, he kind of has that. Jared Vanderbilt kind of has that, where I just keep thinking, man, like him and Jokic in transition – if you can force a mismatch in transition like 50% of the time, you're going to be starting from a point of advantage so much. I remain incredibly high. It was interesting to see so many people jump off the bandwagon this year. I remain so high on him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know why anyone would be jumping off. If he didn't have his lungs, he didn't have his legs, he's playing at altitude, he's a rookie, and the dude was like, some of those rebounds he was getting, garbage time or not. I mean, that's a pogo stick off the floor, dude. I mean, that, and at Summer League, rebounding percentage, set the over under at 29.5%. Seriously.
Yeah. He might lead the league, or he might lead Summer League in rebounds, which would be really cool. I heard they might try to play him at point guard, too, like at least in stretches, which is just.
Oh, yes.
This team is going to be fun.
Just send Monday, too.
The Summer League team is going to be so dope. All right, this last one, because I think it's interesting. Where do you have Wancho in terms of, like, if Denver were to trade Wancho on Thursday night, what kind of value would they need to get back for you to not feel bad about that?
I don't think Wancho has a lot of value right now.
Yeah.
I believe that he can, like, I believe in a world in which Wancho plays some of that value back up, but at the moment, given his chemistry and like his locker room value, just as like a glue guy, someone that everyone seems to like, friends with Jokic, who doesn't seem to have a lot of friends, I think he holds more value in Denver that far down the bench than he would anywhere else. Maybe some teams are interested on a flyer on lottery-esque talent who needs just a change of scenery or whatever. But I don't think anyone's going to see Wancho as valuable as Tim currently does in his locker room.
I'm not sure that's accurate. I mean, we don't know, quite frankly, but I'm not sure that's – shooting is such a premium in height and length. And I don't think Wancho – unfortunately, I just don't know that he's ever going to be defensively what I would want him to, or physically even. He's just such a skinny-framed guy. But the shooting and the off-ball offense to me is just so real, and I do wonder if teams would be willing to take a shot at him. Here's one thing I'm curious, though. Sometimes players – of Wancho's caliber, they're better. He has shown flashes, like the best version of him, not over like one play, but over, you know, weeks at a time. The best version of him has been really, really good. And if that's actually who he is, and the injuries over the last two seasons have kind of disguised that, Denver might have a chance to extend him this summer for 3 or 4 years on a super cheap deal that 2 years from now we're like, oh yeah, they have Wancho on, you know, $6 million a year. What is this?
I know.
Ridiculous.
I know. There's a chance that. There's a chance these two seasons for Wancho are a blessing in disguise, because they don't bring everyone back, right? If everyone is approaching their ceiling. So look, I believe in Wancho, especially alongside a player like Jokic. Wancho is a Jokic player. So I believe in him, man. I just think that if I'm another team, I would wait to see him hit a shot again before I traded for shooting.
I'd love to see Denver extend him this summer on a cheap deal. And maybe he takes it, you know? I mean, he seems to kind of embrace the end of bench role, but I do have a sneaky suspicion with a little bit of health, some more strength, and maybe just a little more confidence. He has a role. And this what you take. That's what it takes. You have to have one of your eight guys, because in the playoffs it gets down to eight. One of your eight guys, maybe two or three of them, have to be making about 50% of market value. And he's a guy that I think – him and Beasley both are guys that if everything broke right, that would work. All right, let's take another break. When we get back, though, I want to talk about the Lakers and this big trade that they had, and just kind of see where does Denver now fit into the league in the Western Conference now that the Lakers have a super team, sort of. We'll be right back. Back here with Brendan Vogt, and want to quickly tell you today's show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Be there, do that, get rewarded. Also want to thank Untuckit for sponsoring Locked On. Untuckit makes great shirts specifically designed to look great untucked. A little casual, a little formal look, comfortable, wear to work or on the weekends. Go to untuckit.com and use promo code NBA to get 20% off. And then Grip 6 belts, ultra lightweight, no holes, no flaps, really, really cool belts that are kind of, I've got three of them now, one in every color. Super comfortable, I can attest to. Check those out as well. Okay, so Brendan, we kind of knew this was coming. The Anthony Davis deal... We knew that the Lakers, despite fumbling literally every step along the process here over the last 6 years, we knew that they were going to end up with LeBron and AD. It was just a matter of time and at what price. Now that it's happened, are you disheartened at all by the Lakers existing with LeBron and AD?
Well, on one hand, Adam, I think prior to that trade report, we should say, it seemed like there was a non-zero chance that the Nuggets could win a title next season. It was never likely, but it was on the table.
Can I interject and just say that sure. I actually think, and I'm probably right about this sometime in October, I'm going to save this bullet for when it'll be most effective. I think the Nuggets have as good of a title shot this next year as any time before 2009, and prior to that, any time since like 1986. The Nuggets, I think, next year actually have a numerical percentage of winning the title next year.
Oh, yeah. And so let me bring it all the way around. At first, upon hearing the news of that trade, I thought, well, that window was just slammed shut. I mean, LeBron and AD is just good enough. I don't care if it's Kyrie, Kemba, or Matthew Dellavedova that they give that third max to. You like your chances with LeBron and AD. But a point that's been brought up in the last 48 hours and deservedly so or reasonably so is that health is a major concern with this Lakers team. Yeah. LeBron's 34 coming off the first strain of his career, to my knowledge. Anthony Davis is injury prone. This is not a team that's going to have a lot of cash to spread around the rest of this roster that they don't have yet. So there will be a lack of depth. Should they get hurt, Adam, which is a very real possibility, shorthanded Golden State, shorthanded Lakers, who knows what's up with Houston. Denver's still sitting pretty. So at first I was disheartened, but I ultimately remain hopeful, I think.
I think I run the same gauntlet. Like, you're right that LeBron and AD alone is like a great team. But here's the thing I keep coming back to. The Lakers, when they made that deal, clearly did not understand that the timing of the deal was important. They clearly are so inept at this, like so out of their element, that do we really have confidence that they're going to build a contender? Even if players sort of take a discount to go play there, I mean, there's a chance they can get that third star in New Orleans, whatever, for whatever reason, would do them a massive favor by allowing the trade to happen on the 30th, which, in case you've missed this minutia, which I don't know why you wouldn't have, the Lakers have agreed to trade them on July 6th. On July 6th,
it, for whatever reason, the Lakers would only have a certain amount of cap space, I think like 20, 26 million or something like that available to them, less than a max. If they were to wait till the 30th, the way the collective bargaining agreement would work, the Lakers would end up having 33 million, I think, in cap space and basically enough to sign a max player. So they didn't realize this little like detail in the CBA. And now
it's crazy.
Have agreed to a deal that will leave them with very little money to fill out the rest of their roster. If they were to go out and sign a third max player, you're talking about like just exceptions basically to fill out the rest of your roster. So I say all that to say, I don't think it's a given that LeBron and AD can win, especially when you talk about this is a front office that assembled Michael Beasley, Rondo, Lance Stevenson, yeah. like JaVale McGee, yeah. and not on accident, on purpose. Like they chose those guys. And I'm not convinced. They've already been talking about bringing Rondo back. They might build a team that's actually just not that good around them, and then they would be vulnerable.
Okay, agreed, but counterpoint, LeBron James is probably the poster child for carrying ineptitude beyond the finish line. And if they get a third star, and that third star is Kemba or Kyrie, like I understand how organic team building works and all the crap it takes to win in the playoffs and everything Toronto just did. But I don't care. LeBron, AD, Kemba, or Kyrie is good enough. I don't care who the other guys are. It's good enough.
I'm gonna go out there and on a limb and just say not necessarily. You still have to have shooting in this league, and shooters generally are paid. Like even Danny Green, they're not gonna be able to afford him in that scenario. So Iman Shumpert, they might not be able to.
They could be a bad team and still win the title. I'm just saying, like LeBron. I understand it's the West, not the East, but the KD injury, the Clay injury, we don't know where everyone's going or whatever, but the bottom line is LeBron almost won game one in that finals with Jeff Green. Like, and I don't know, man.
Yeah.
If it's Anthony Davis and Kemba Walker, like, I like his chances. But you're right that from a Nuggets standpoint, man, it's not a given. And you and I fear LeBron as much as any people on this earth, but Denver still has a chance. And to your earlier point, when was the last time that was the case?
So AD has kind of destroyed the Nuggets over the years. Like he's been a guy that he has the 50 piece on the Nuggets in the season opener a couple years back. I mean, he obviously Jokic has some defensive limitations, but especially against these long, very mobile, very skilled bigs like that. So that's a tough matchup. Denver obviously struggles against small forwards with any size. LeBron is kind of like Rodney Hood, but 1,000 times better. And then they struggle
just a little bit.
And then they struggle against really quick guards. So if they got a Kyrie or a Kemba, it'd kind of be the three things Denver struggles with the most, which would just it'd be interesting. All right, so I know we're still ahead of the draft and ahead of the final trades and everything, but right now, who do you think has a better regular season record, and who do you think would be better in the playoffs, Nuggets or Lakers? From where we sit now,
regular season record, Denver, playoffs, Lakers.
I think that's fair. And anything can happen in the playoffs, injuries, this or that. But I'm with, as much as I'm pushing back on it and playing devil's advocate, I'm with you. LeBron and AD is such a perfect pairing. It would be tough to see. But
hey, man, LeBron strained his groin, and that could be a sign of the decline. But that's why they missed the playoffs. And that's the only thing that's different between this year and the other March and Aprils where people started doubting LeBron. First round, second round, with Jeff Green, he terrifies me. With Anthony Davis, it's more than that. So, if you're a Lakers fan, somehow you're right back in it.
Can you imagine what would have happened? I know this never even got close, but Denver wanted a meeting with LeBron. Can you imagine what would have happened if he would have come here? I mean, right straight off the bat, Jokic would be in New Orleans right now. Right? Anthony Davis would be in Denver. Yeah. That'd be like a straight up deal. I think Millsap is probably moved for like Trevor Ariza and Kyle Korver or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. Gary Harris is probably traded. The Nuggets roster, they would probably be championship contenders, title contenders, but my God, would this team be 100% different? And they probably, like the Lakers, would have traded every pick between now and 2045 or whatever it is.
Okay, so let me ask you, diehard Nuggets fan, not a single finals appearance, sorry to rub that in, let alone a title. So would you Would you take that? Would you take LeBron and AD lead you to a title if it meant you had to lose Gary and Jokic?
I know this is going to sound really crazy, and I don't even know if you're going to believe me, but to be honest, I think no. It's not because I'm like, oh no, we're too good. Like at some point, Denver. I do think at some point this team is some player is going to be missing from this team. Jamal, Gary, like you know, it's never going to be exactly how you hope, where they all just grow together. And I get that, and I'm prepared for it. But that mercenary team to me, it's not like Toronto where they still had Kyle Lowry, who was sort of the heartbeat of the team and like the soul of the team. And you get Kawhi Leonard, and you know, it still felt like a Toronto team. That team you just talked about would have felt like. You know, it wouldn't feel like your home anymore. It'd feel like an Airbnb that you rented out, you know? So that's what would have happened to that team, where it would have been like, yeah, their jerseys say the Nuggets, but it doesn't exactly feel like a Nuggets team.
I agree. Although, having said that, watching, I know it's different because they had Lowry watching Toronto in that parade, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's all... You take it. You might take it more than you think.
John Elway winning the Super Bowl his last 2 years with the Broncos, and it being him, like to me, I always think, what would it have been like if Denver would have, you know, traded John Elway for like Marshall Faulk or something and won a Super Bowl? It'd have been like, yeah, it's a little weird, you know. Like it's great you won, but there's this guy that we don't really identify with being a Nugget or a Bronco, as opposed to John Elway, which is the storybook perfect thing that could have happened. So, the Nuggets are the anti-Lakers. That's why I don't want that kind of thing to happen. But alas, let's move on real quick and wrap up with this. The Celtics empire appears to be collapsing from underneath them.
Al Horford, love this song, Adam.
Kyrie Irving out the door, apparently ghosting, like a bad Tinder date, ghosting the Celtics now, just not returning phone calls or like giving them. So they are mentally prepared for him just being completely off the board, which is also. Like, Denver tried to trade for Kyrie. That's another what if. Can you imagine if Denver would have gotten Kyrie, the turmoil he could have created in two seasons here? And, oh, my God. We would have hated this team, I think, by now. And then also Al Horford now opting out of his contract and reportedly very interested in going elsewhere, just getting off of the Celtics. So you're loving this. 1 year ago, exactly, especially 2 years ago, the Celtics had a can't-miss war chest of assets and players. Last year, it was like, okay, now things are really going to come together for them. And now here we are just now in 2019, before free agency, and it's like, man, the Celtics kind of, they don't have to start over from the bottom, but they're certainly taking like 2-3 steps back. Is this just the nature of the NBA?
Yeah, man, nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. And you and I are... We're very big on hoping and doing our best to make sure that the fans kept a healthy perspective on that Nuggets postseason. Yeah. Enjoy the season, take it for what it was. But those that were upset with falling short yet again, and those that pointed to a lack of a guarantee that they'd be back, to some extent, they're absolutely right. And you look no further than Boston, than Minnesota, even Philly, who's in a much better spot than those two teams were in a to-be-decided mode. The brightest future in the league, it's almost like being the best team in baseball in the first 3 months, Adam. Yeah. I'm not sure you want that mark. You know, it's
a reference I don't understand, but I'll believe you.
Well, that you would see that through all the way a 162 season and the World Series is so unlikely, right?
Yeah.
And so how many times have we learned this lesson that the guaranteed sure thing steel curtain is anything but that? Hell, even Golden State only won 3 of 5. So it's fun as a Celtics hater, but I think to the point you're leading me to here, as a Nuggets fan, little concerning, Adam.
It's, well, maybe concerning, maybe not. Here's the thing. We've been talking about this in the group chat. I'm probably going to do something for this here in the next couple of weeks, but you go back 5 years or 4 years, and there were all these teams that was like, okay, Who's the next good team to come through? Is it the Lakers with all of their, you know, their picks and young guys, the Nuggets, the 76ers, the Celtics? I think those were the four teams everybody kind of, you know, talked about. I guess there was a couple other you could throw out there. The Suns had all their first picks. The Knicks had Kristaps Porzingis and, you know, allegedly something. The Timberwolves even. If you just think back 4 years ago, all those teams had young, quote-unquote, cornerstone players. You fast forward to now – the Lakers have cashed in. The Celtics half cashed in. The Knicks don't even have Kristaps City. I don't even know what they are. The Suns had like 12 lottery picks, and right now I think they have Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton to show for it. The Timberwolves are basically Towns. The 76ers have a great team, but you know they only have two guys basically that are part of the young core. Denver's the only team that that hasn't kind of pushed their chips in yet. And I don't know, I'm not saying that's necessarily a good or bad thing or whatever, but
right.
They kind of are the only team that has played their hand all the way through, at least to this point. It's kind of wild.
And they're still at a place, Adam, where they have more time. And that was the weird thing about them being a two seed, losing so close to the Western Conference Finals last season. Seemingly every time a team loses in the second round or later in the NBA playoffs, we all do the what do they do now? Do they blow it up? What changes do they have to make? We weren't doing that with Denver because seemingly for at least one season, it appears they're going to run this thing back. They have that time and they can be patient, and it's allowed them to really lay a foundation and grow each year. But Adam, the lesson the Celtics have taught us is you can wait too long, and that linear growth doesn't go forever. It's not guaranteed. And turning that final corner is the hardest thing to do in sports, maybe, and it requires sometimes moving on, yeah. Moving on from that foundation you had built, cashing in those chips, taking a risk, as Masai just did. So
right.
It's a thought we don't like going to bed with, Adam, but it may be the case that to finally do it, to finally turn the corner, the Nuggets have to push these chips in and turn into something else, you know?
Probably the case, unless MPJ turns out to be awesome, and then the Nuggets can have their cake and eat it too, but I don't know.
Wouldn't that be something?
It would be great. It would be great for the one time it ever works that a team just has all of their guys, and like Wancho and Vanderbilt and Beasley, they're all still on the roster when Denver wins.
I'll tell you what, all 13,000 of us at that parade will be loving it.
Oh, man, that's a real question. So that's a real one. Toronto just had a parade with 2 million people. Honest guess. If the Nuggets were to win the championship in 2020, how many people would be at the parade?
I'd be surprised if it's more than 500,000.
Yeah, 500,000 would be a lot. That'd be great. I don't even know what the Broncos one's got. I thought the Broncos one's got like that many people, but I could be wrong.
Well, then it's going to be, 300.
I was thinking like maybe 100,000. Honestly, like if you think of... Man. When was this parade? It was Monday, right? So just like Monday morning in June. I don't know how many people would be out there for it. But, you know.
It'll just be us in our Denver Stiss float waving to D-Line Co.
Hey, man.
He stands by himself.
Nas got that super fan Nas got his own, like he had a little golf cart that he got to lead the parade in. I'm really pushing. In fact, I'm going to plant this in all of our listeners' ears, then we'll get out of this. If the Nuggets do win a championship, we have to all lobby for a Denver Stiss, at least a golf cart, if not a full-on float, like some kind of truck. You know, with us in the back of the truck or something, just any kind of miniature float, we have to have
just
that.
Let us ride with Welsh, you know? That's all we ask.
Brendan, thanks so much, buddy. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, for sure, man. Anytime, Adam.
Everybody else, we will be back again with brand new episodes very soon. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked on Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.